and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast. This is Mark Williams speaking to you from Cambridge in the UK. It's a big week in the decarbonisation process, or it should have been a big week, with COP26 happening in the UK. And you can read my thoughts about COP26 in this week's feature article on the Ship Energy website. We've run a series of podcasts around COP26 covering different forms of power and different ways in which the shipping industry and wider industry may decarbonize. And it's the turn of ammonia to be in the spotlight in this conversation. In fact, it's a big day for ammonia. It's just been announced today that Mitsui O.S.K. Lines in Japan has entered into an agreement with Nomura Shipbuilding and Mitsubishi Shipbuilding jointly to develop a large-scale ammonia carrier that will operate on ammonia fuel. This is because in Japan, the annual demand for ammonia is expected to reach more than 3 million tonnes by 2030 and 30 million tonnes by 2050, according to data from MOL. So MOL thinks it needs to build large-size ammonia carriers with the aim of providing, quote, safe, high-quality and reliable transport of the green energy fuel. So it's a big week for ammonia. It's a big day for ammonia. And we thought we'd better have someone who knows a lot about ammonia come on and talk to us about it. And so I'm delighted to be able to introduce you to our listeners today, Dr. Natalie Gupta, who is Director of Bunkering at Yara Clean Ammonia. As a commercial director for Bunkering Value Chain Partnerships at this newly established clean ammonia unit at Yara, the world's biggest fertilizer producer, Natalie is responsible for supporting the development of the market for ammonia as a shipping fuel. Previously, Natalie's worked as an international consultant in the maritime industry with a focus on ports, trade facilitation and decarbonisation of the industry. She has a PhD in development economics and a master's degree in finance and financial law. So, Natalie, welcome to the podcast. Really pleased to have you on.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for the introduction.
Very well, very welcome, and thank you for appearing and taking the time out. Natalie's speaking to us from Oslo, where I hear that she'll be bravely playing tennis in the cold this weekend outside, whereas we'll be braving the cold and wet for the annual fireworks celebration that we have in the UK this year. We could do with blowing up Parliament again, if you ask me, but let's not talk about that. Natalie, please stop me from committing libel and tell us a little bit about yourself and Yara Clean Ammonia, please.
Sure thing. I will start with Yara. I mean, your introduction was more than adequate. Thank you. I'll start by saying that Yara has a long and quite interesting history. And allow me to say straight out that I'm actually quite new to the company. I only started about a couple of months back. And I was working, before joining Yara, I was working in the ports and shipping space. And that said, Yara as a company is over 100 years old. It was founded in 1905 by its founders in Norway. And as you know, Norway has a very long and distinguished history in shipping, as well as fertilizers, which is crop nutrition, which is what Yara has been focusing a lot so far. And its history is interesting for several reasons. So first of all, it really has a long history in its core business, which, as I mentioned, is crop nutrition. And I'm really appreciating the amount of knowledge and experience that people within this company have, particularly on this side. So agriculture and crop nutrition. Mm-hmm. And part of that includes a deep understanding of ammonia as a molecule and as a commodity. And I don't know how much this is generally known by people who operate in the shipping and bunkering sector, but Yara is actually the largest shipper of ammonia. And to achieve that, of course, they own their own fleet and also have a rather sophisticated setup with respect to production units, terminals, and storage capacity. But what I found really interesting is the fact that as a company and as a result of its activities, it's actually seen this shift in energy systems over time. And one of the facts that I found out early on when I was researching about the company before I joined is the fact that ammonia in the earlier years, before natural gas came to the fore, was that ammonia was being produced in a green manner, namely using renewable energy. And this only stopped in 1993 when natural gas took over. So, So in some way, we are now turning back the clock, trying to go back to green. But this is actually something that Yara has experience of and was pursuing for its activities before natural gas came to the fore and become a cheaper option. So in that context, Yara Clean Ammonia is basically a segment of the company that is currently working to develop the market for specifically blue and green ammonia. Mm-hmm. And there are different end user sectors, and the shipping industry is one of them. And the objectives set out for the team, which I work in, includes working towards capturing these growth opportunities in emission-free fuel for sectors such as shipping, as I already mentioned, but also carbon-free food production, ammonia for industrial applications, for example, steel and cement. And I specifically work on the bunkering side, so essentially looking at ammonia as a bunker fuel for the shipping industry.
It's fascinating to hear that we're going back to a platonic golden age of low-carbon ammonia production that was dropped in favour of, I suppose, very cheap natural gas feedstock because of Norway's North Sea and Norwegian Sea natural gas production.
That's exactly right, indeed.
So you're in the right place, you're with the right organisation, you've got the strategy, you've got the products, you've got the production facilities, you have the fleet to move this stuff around. But what about ammonia itself, for the non-chemists among us? What about ammonia as a molecule and a commodity? Is it possible to scale this thing up in the way that MOL mentioned in the press release that I was quoting from earlier?
That's a really good question. And I, as I said, I come from the shipping sector. So it was a bit of a steep learning curve. But that said, the energy transition in our industry has been happening for a few years now. Mm-hmm. And ammonia quickly became a topic of discussion, particularly in the context of the longer term, you know, ultimate solutions for shipping. So I can talk a little bit about ammonia as a molecule. As I have a social sciences background, and for me, things really stick in my head if they are told or taught to me in terms of a story. Mm-hmm. And if any of your podcast listeners are like me in that respect, then as you mentioned, I think the best way to learn about ammonia is not necessarily via the, you know, chemical compound and chemical processes type of explanation, but rather in the context of its use and also the history of its use and the history of the industries that have used it so far. So before I landed this job in Yara, I picked up a few books about ammonia, and one of them that I found interesting was a historical account of how ammonia was seen as a solution for what was essentially one of the biggest challenges for human beings across the centuries. And it's essentially how to make sure that we are able to farm in the same locations. That essentially means, how do we make sure that the soil that we farm on remains fertile and is not depleted?
Yes.
And the history of ammonia is inextricably tied to that question. And the building block of that is nitrogen. And the molecule itself, the ammonia as a molecule, is a nitrogen compound, and it's composed of nitrogen from the air and hydrogen. So today, the CO2 emissions from the production of ammonia are basically a byproduct of the fossil fuels that are used to produce the hydrogen. So currently what is used is natural gas, as we mentioned earlier, or there's also a portion of ammonia currently being produced that uses coal.
Yeah.
So coal is mainly used in Southeast Asia and China, and China is currently a large user of ammonia. China currently consumes about 30% of world-produced mm-hmm. ammonia. And another fact to note is that 80% of ammonia is currently used in fertilizer production and direct use in agriculture. So this reminds us of ammonia in terms of its history. And in terms of the elements, key characteristics of the molecule include low flammability. Then that's quite a good thing in general and also for shipping. So essentially what that means is that it's very difficult to ignite. It's much more difficult to ignite ammonia than methane and hydrogen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. However, the other side of the coin is that, as most of your listeners will know, ammonia is a toxic before it becomes flammable. So what that means is that the safety principles used when handling ammonia need to be very strict, and they include things like segregation, double barriers, leakage detection, and so forth. And also the other aspect to note is that ammonia is corrosive. And from a bunkering perspective, and more generally from a handling perspective, this means that storage and handling requirements need to be specialized. So you can't just be using one sort of fuel and then switch to ammonia. The materials used for that infrastructure needs to be specific for ammonia. But that said, the molecule is currently traded internationally. And in fact, I found out a few days back that ammonia is the second largest produced chemical. And from a bunkering point of view, like methanol, it has a lower energy density than fuel oil. And this essentially means that ships may need to, I don't know, sail slower, bunker more frequently, or may have to increase the size of their tanks. But overall, because of regulations and other factors that we are learning about now with this energy transition in the sector, this may be a more feasible option compared to other solutions going forward. But essentially, to complete the picture, there's also something that your listeners might be interested in, because sometimes we hear about green ammonia, gray ammonia. So I just wanted to specify what these are. So gray ammonia is essentially what we spoke about earlier, which is steam method reforming of natural gas to produce the hydrogen and the carbon monoxide. Then we have brown ammonia, which it sometimes is referred to, which is essentially the ammonia produced using coal. Then we have something called blue ammonia, which still uses hydrocarbons, so for example, natural gas, but the CO2 emissions that emerge out of that are captured and stored. And this is linked to technologies which are referred to as CCS. And the viability of blue ammonia is therefore inextricably linked to the developments around CCS, both from the point of view of capturing the CO2, but most importantly, the storage element, so where to store it. And then we have the green ammonia, which is generated using electrolysis and renewable energy and water. And we also sometimes talk about yellow ammonia, which is essentially green, but it's using nuclear. That's not a very prominent thing, but your listeners might hear about it. So I thought just to mention that as well. But essentially, what to remember from a molecule point of view is that the basic idea for this energy transition is to replace the natural gas or the coal with renewable energy to power the conditions to enable the molecule to be produced. Essentially, the question of ammonia is the question of hydrogen production. As I said, it's a traded commodity, so the safety standards around how to trade it already exists, and companies like Yara are well-versed in that. And also, you know, as we said, fertilizers is one of the major end-user segments, but there are other segments as well. So it's not just an experience to do with crop nutrition, fertilizer production, but ammonia is also used for producing other things. As for example, pharmaceuticals, nylon, refrigerants, and so forth.
Yeah, getting into this more as a debate around the shipping industry and the role that ammonia can play as a bunker fuel. This, I mean, the academic literature is pretty solid now that the world could move to an ammonia economy if it wanted to, ammonia being a hydrogen carrier and the idea being to replace hydrocarbons with hydrogen and hydrogen carriers. Clearly, the technology to ship ammonia already exists. And so it really comes down to, can we scale the infrastructure to supply shipping with ammonia as a fuel? And can we safely use ammonia on board ships as a bunker fuel? What's the what's the Yara view on that? Can we safely use it on board?
Yeah, that's one of the big questions, together with others that are being discussed almost constantly. The debate is really alive and kicking at the moment. So I think your point is well taken and also well received. And I think there are two lines of thinking here. So one is, as you mentioned, ammonia directly used as a bunker fuel. And then you have hydrogen and ammonia being used as a carrier of hydrogen. So just a snapshot of the second thing, ammonia, besides being used directly, could also be a good hydrogen carrier. And this fits very well with the calls to move forward to a hydrogen economy. And it is preferable to carry hydrogen in the form of ammonia than carrying hydrogen directly. Because when hydrogen is carried, it involves a lot of dissipation when stored and transported. And also there's a safety dimension associated with that. And also the energy density of hydrogen is lower than that of ammonia. So one of the ways to look at the future for ammonia in the shipping industry, one is demand for hydrogen as a bunker fuel and what role ammonia can play to facilitate that. But as you mentioned, the main driver for setting up companies or business units like Yara Clean Ammonia is looking at the direct application of ammonia as a bunker fuel. And the one of the key aspects or one of the key drivers here is, of course, the regulatory story. And that is sometimes quite overwhelming. I personally find it quite difficult to follow in a lot of ways. But is it important to understand that between now and 2030, ships are required to gradually reduce their carbon intensity? And the technologies to do that in a lot of ways are already there. But going forward, by 2050, the industry needs to reduce its carbon emissions by half compared to 2008. And that will require using different fuels from what we have now. So there's a series of incentive structures here. One is the regulatory mandatory rules. And then there's reductions that need to be made year by year or target based. But then there's also a question of making sure that owners do not end up with stranded assets or do not end up with at the back of the queue when they end up making those investments, but then struggling to find the molecule. Right now, companies like Yara and teams like the one that I'm working with are trying to develop the market for ammonia as a bunker fuel, for example. And the safety standards, the technological element, the regulatory element, all of those are key components that we are currently working on to make sure that ammonia is viable, both from an operational point of view, but also from other points of views as a bunker fuel. One thing that needs to be made clear is that if ammonia is not safe as a bunker fuel, it will not become a bunker fuel. Namely, if it is offered to the market as a bunker fuel, it means that the safety standards are as good, if not better, than the standards for the fuels that exist today. So that is something that needs to be kept in mind. If you are able to use ammonia as a bunker fuel, it means that it's safe enough to be used as a bunker fuel.
Is that technology there today to use ammonia safely as a bunker fuel?
That's a good question. We are working on it as it is safely traded. So it's safely loaded and discharged from vessels. Bunkering is slightly different because of the operational aspects, and standards are still in development. So right now, we don't have an official standard for ammonia as a bunker fuel. So that these are all studies are being developed and looked into. As of today, ammonia cannot be used as a bunker fuel. Green ammonia is still not yet into the market, but ignoring that fact, ammonia cannot be used as a bunker fuel today. But technology developments, as well as safety standards, certifications, and all these other dimensions are being developed, and it will not take too long for this to take place.
Mm-hmm. So we're not too far away.
We are not too far away, indeed. And also, just to point out that in terms of market segments, you can look at it from two points of view. One is ammonia as a blending fuel, and one is ammonia as a primary fuel. So there's also these two elements to consider. Some vessel will want to use ammonia as a primary fuel, but green ammonia, for example, can be used as a means of reducing emissions if used as a blending option. So this is also to be considered.
Could you blend ammonia with, say, marine gas oil and burn it in a ship's engine that exists today to reduce its carbon dioxide emissions?
It's a great question, and this is precisely the type of questions that we are exploring at the moment. I don't have an answer to that right now, but this is exactly the type of projects that we are pursuing. Yara, together with other leading technology companies and classification societies, that is exactly what we're looking at right now.
And presumably you wouldn't have taken this position, you know, moving on from a successful career as an international consultant, you wouldn't have taken this position if you didn't think that there was commercial viability for ammonia as a marine fuel personally. So what are the commercial opportunities? I think the assumption is that ammonia could be suitable for deep ocean shipping because you can liquefy it relatively easily, you can store it at near ambient temperatures, you can carry it in large quantities relatively safely, as you say, because it's not very combustible. It has a high flash point due to all the nitrogen content. So is it the fuel to replace bunker fuel, or can it replace everything? You know, is it globally applicable?
It's a question that emerges quite a lot, and it's a really good one. And I think it's also linked to concerns about supply. And I really do understand what ship owners are going through right now, because, you know, as we always refer to the chicken and egg situation with suppliers like Yara on one side, looking to the market for indications on demand, and then ship owners looking at companies like Yara for the supply. And the solution really to that is going step by step. But essentially, ammonia at the moment is being offered as a solution for several end user segments, not just one. So the fact that ammonia can be used for more than one application is in principle a positive thing, just because it's carbon free and carbon neutral, depending on, of course, the type of ammonia that is being used. But the question relating to what market to tackle is also very much linked to, you know, the first mover challenge, so to speak. And the key aspect of this challenge includes the high risks of upfront investments for Yara when, as I said, you don't have a clear view of the market for the commodity. And then there's also things like free riding and variables influencing timelines when it comes to ammonia as a bunker fuel, specifically including carbon prices and also declining renewable energy costs and emission allowances and so forth. So going forward, there are lots of predictions about how much ammonia and green ammonia will be required. But I think the question should be based on really understanding what segments are likely to move forward with ammonia first, and consider the fact that vessel conversions or new builds will be picking up pace slowly, because this is the application of a new technology. So it won't all scale up immediately at once. first movers here will actually potentially be rewarded well because they will have established relationships in the market and even potentially some contracts with suppliers like, for example, Yara, and will therefore be right at the top of the queue if indeed there will be a queue when it comes to procuring the molecule. However, there will be enough for the purposes of first mover applications. And as the market demand picks up, I'm personally not concerned about supply. And shipping and other sectors may be catalytic in terms of fostering supply side investments and producing the molecules. So essentially, remember, there's an inextricable link between hydrogen and ammonia. And this makes ammonia quite important moving forward with the wider concept of, you know, hydrogen-related activities or so-called hydrogen economies. So shipping here is playing a role for itself, but it's also playing a role in providing a market for a commodity that will serve other industries as well going forward, potentially. So in that sense, being able to support the transition and the move towards ammonia as well as methanol and other alternative fuels for shipping industry is quite important, not just for shipping, but for other end users as well. Mm. And the key point to note as well is that ammonia will not be expected to fulfill 100% of the demand. There are other options. There will be other options available. And as we tend to say, the future is a multi-fuel future. So this does not necessarily diminish the risks and concerns that ship owners have when it comes to investing, but it does point to the fact that from a supply side, ammonia will not be required to fulfill 100% of the bunker fuel requirements going forward. It will pick up slowly, it will start slowly, and supply will meet demand as comfort, contracts, trust, and all these other commercial, so to speak, elements come into the fore. I think it's, to be honest, it's happening way faster than I was to predict a few years ago. Yeah. And I think that's precisely why I made the jump, because I thought this is happening too fast and it's very difficult for me to follow and keep up with what is going on as an outsider. And that is part of the reason why I joined Yara, because I thought in order to keep up with what is going on, I need to see this from within.
Well, it seems to be an eminently sensible decision, I would say, because you're sat in the cat bird seat, as our American friends, for the ammonia ride in the right place. So, you know, you've got a personal stake in this, and professionally it feels like this is very doable, and it's happening quite quickly with announcements like MOL has made today, that this is happening faster than perhaps the regulators who've been enjoying the carbon-free jamboree in Glasgow this week might anticipate.
I would agree with you. Private sector and some of the technology companies and also companies like the one that I work with, they in some ways are moving faster than the regulators. And the drawback for suppliers like Yara is, and producers like Yara, is the fact that the price of green ammonia is inextricably linked to carbon taxes. So essentially, regulation needs to move forward on that front to ensure that ammonia is feasible from a pricing point of view compared to alternatives. So you picked up on something quite important there that is part of what we are monitoring. But as I said, yes, the private sector might be moving slightly faster than regulators. But that said, I think regulators, especially in European Union, and let's see what happens after COP, they're also, from my point of view, moving, at least when it comes to regulation, at least from a European Union point of view, they're moving quite steady as well. So I think it's something we need to monitor. And, you know, regulation as well as other developments be moving. And I think that will influence things like the price of the molecule, as well as the speed of the investments that will be going in to produce the green hydrogen that can then allow for the production of green ammonia. And also, don't forget blue ammonia, so essentially capture and storage. All of these things will be happening, and all we can do is really monitor and push.
Yeah, quite right. I'm sure that's right. And I think, you know, the role of government surely has to be to agree the carbon taxation, such as to build the framework in which the markets can operate as efficiently as possible. Hmm. And move the technology and its applications along as fast as we can in order to meet those emission targets. Natalie, it's been absolutely great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on and spending time with us on the podcast. It's been a great insight at what is, you know, the very early days. We're on the cusp of huge expansion in ammonia production and trade and utilization in the industry. So I hope that in the future we can have you back to come and explain how things are developing.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Well, thanks again, and best of luck with it. And
thank you.
Hope to see you again soon.
Indeed. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
And thanks to all of you out there in listener land, in podcast land, for listening to this. And I hope you've enjoyed this short series of COP26 podcasts from Ship Energy. But we'll be back with more, a usual fortnightly schedule, with lots more interesting guests explaining how things are going to move forward as we transition to net zero for shipping. But thanks again, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye.